Wonderful. Thank you so much. With that, I'd like to ask our Virginia area delegate, Terry W., to introduce to our spiritual speaker for the Virginia area 2020 Fall Assembly.
Great. Thank you, Tom. Good morning, everyone. It's wonderful to see everyone back. At least I can see you virtually. It is my pleasure and honor to introduce our speaker this morning. I met Sherry through our mutual work as delegates last year at the First World Service Conference that I attended. I'm panel 59, as I talked about yesterday. Sherry and the Kentucky area are panel 58. So this is Sherry's last year as speaker. She will be rotating out of speaker at the end of this year. Anyway, Sherry and I have been working all summer, along with a few other delegates and a trustee, on the conflict resolution workshop task force. And it's nice having a Kentucky voice. And for those of you who don't know, my hometown is Louisville, Kentucky. My family is from that region, as is our chairperson, Tom. We're both Louisville people, so I thought how perfect to invite Sherry. Now, Sherry has been in Al-Anon for 27 years, and she started service within a year of coming into Al-Anon, first as a sub for the Alateen meeting. And she's been in every kind of service you can imagine at all levels, group, district, area, and the service center. She speaks. She's a personal sponsor and a service sponsor. And she is committed to the 12th step, carrying the message and repaying for all that she has received, doing it gratefully. And she just told me recently. The Kentucky area had their assembly last weekend, and it was their election assembly. And Sherry will be the incoming Kentucky area chairperson. So with that, let's give a big Virginia welcome to my fellow delegate, Sherry Hoke.
Everybody, I finally made it. You guys, it was so. Was so simple, and I couldn't get it. I kept going to like the little arrow at across from stop video instead of just clicking on where it said stop video. So I love this program. I love what we're doing electronically, and every time I use this stuff, I learn something. So don't feel bad if you don't have all the answers. And thank you for your wonderful tech team. Oh my gosh. I even went through the training. So anyways, here I am, but I'm Sherry, a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon that includes Alateen. And I was looking through an old journal last night, and I found this that one of our long-timers in Al-Anon said last time I heard her talk. And she said, "God, fill my mouth with good stuff. Let me know when I've said enough." And I love that. It's just, about keeping it simple. So I'm just going to tell you a little bit about me. So thank you, Terry, for inviting me. This is a great honor. I don't know that I've ever been a spiritual speaker. That just kind of gave me a pause to think, huh, how spiritual are you? Well, I think I'm pretty spiritual because my closest friends would tell you they call me Lighthouse. So that might give you an idea about something. But like I said, I've been in Al-Anon for 27 years. But before that, I was born and still live in Louisville, Kentucky, and that is the home of horse racing and whiskey. That's what we're known for, unfortunately. I'm the great great granddaughter of a Lutheran minister, and I'm the granddaughter of two alcoholic grandfathers, according to my parents. So that means I had parents that were both adult children of alcoholics, and so now that I've done a lot of living, I'm not sure which is worse, living with an alcoholic or adult children. But it's all a challenge, and Al-Anon works on all of it. Today, I'm married to a recovering alcoholic, also 27 years sober. So As far back as I remember, I always believed in a higher power, and I've always called my higher power God. I grew up, you know, as church, as part of my life, and Girl Scouts, and you know, but it seemed more to be kind of in that like Sunday box that, you know, it was just something that you did and you put away. And I'm not sure I really got it until really I came to Al-Anon. One of the biggest things that happened to me growing up was at age 10, I was in a car wreck. My mom was trying to be a good daughter and took my sister and I and her mom out on a beautiful fall day. It actually will be the anniversary will be this month. And we went around a corner and all of a sudden we were hit head on by a drunk driver. And, you know, I was right then, I was 10 years old. My sister was 8. My mom was knocked out. She was bleeding from her mouth. I'm sure I was in shock, but I was the one that ran for help and ran to some house close by. My grandmother was the one that comforted me. But, you know, mom was okay, but grandmother went to the hospital that night and ended up dying from internal injuries. And, you know, I had no idea how God would end up using that tragedy in my life, but he continues to use it. You know, one of the sayings that I say all the time is God never wastes a hurt. And when I came to Al-Anon, I listened, you know, they told me I should get a sponsor. And so I was listening, you know, to people's stories. And this woman talked about her being in a car wreck and getting hit by a drunk driver, and her 2-year-old daughter died. And that person became my sponsor because we could, that was just a hurt that we could both share. So the other way that I've used that in recent years is some of you guys might know an AA not called Tom I. And he was talking and talked about how he hadn't been able to make, he had killed 2 people drunk driving and served prison time. And he had talked about how he couldn't make amends to one of those people. He was able to make amends to one. And I went up to him after that talk and I just said, you know, as a survivor of a drunk driving accident, I want you to know that I forgive you. And so that's, you know, and God continues to use that story today. I was married. I grew up just kind of normal middle America, I would say. And, you know, I got out of high school and my family, we didn't really do college. And I had just kind of trained in business typing and that sort of thing. And so I went straight into the workforce. And I'm getting a little feedback somewhere. But so, you know, I wanted to get a job, but, you know, really I was on the marriage train. Like, that's what you're supposed to do. You get out of school and get married and have kids, right? So I met this guy from the wrong side of town. My parents hated him, so I knew he must be the one. So about a year later, you know, we ended up getting married, and just days into that marriage, I knew I had really made a bad mistake. And I hung in there for 4 months, which doesn't seem like much, but when you're living it, some of you guys know, he emotionally abandoned me, quit his job. I was supporting both of us. He took over my car and I just became a prisoner in my own home. And so somehow this pretty shy, if you can believe it, I was pretty shy back then and very self-conscious. And I was able to walk away from that marriage. And so, you know, I just went on with my work life. I just kept advancing and, you know, moving to different jobs. And I was really a hard worker most of the time. Most of my life, I've had a couple jobs. And at 25, I'm married for the second time. And we were married 5 years. And then we just bought a house 6 months before this. And he came home Easter night and said he didn't want to be married anymore. He had a honey at work that was married with 3 children. So we ended that marriage. And that was right before I turned 30 years old. You know, what I learned out of that was, really just more about myself. I really wasn't happy, but I would probably have never left that relationship because I wouldn't have had the guts, because now I'm a two-time loser, right? Because I'm divorced for the second time. But of course, I've met you guys, and there's a lot of us now that I know. But back then, I was like the only one. I might have been the first person like in my class to get divorced, you know. So, and there had never even been divorce around my family. So, you know, I just took on a lot of guilt and shame with that, that I carried into recovery. So at this point, my job's doing good. I've gotten into advertising business. I love it. And, you know, I'm going to school part time and, you know, life is good. And so I go to this bar one night with two friends, and I didn't go to a lot of bars, and it was a place I'd never been before. And I ended up going to the bathroom. It was really a terrible night because it was like all these old men that was like, what are we doing here? So I go to the bathroom, and when I come out, these two guys are standing there. And I had a hat on. They said, hey, I like your hat. And I'm like, thanks. And I just kind of blew them off. And then, you know, that little voice in your head starts saying, oh, well, they seem like they were kind of nice, probably about my age. And so, you know, I started talking to him, and I started dancing with Bruce, and we got to talking, and he had just gotten dumped by his wife that had an affair, and I had just gotten dumped. So that was one of the things that we had in common. I know that's pretty sick, but it's just the truth. And the other thing that he told me that night is he said he didn't drink anymore. And I'd never met anybody that didn't drink anymore. So, I mean, you know, in my house, there was always booze around, but nobody ever got drunk. And it just wasn't a big thing. It was just a social thing. And so I was like, wow. So he took my number, and the next day he ended up calling me, or 2 days later, and I was home studying, and he said, hey, I'm just right down the street. He called me on a payphone. Some of y'all will know what that is, but some of you won't, you young ones out there. And so he called me and said, hey, I'm in the neighborhood. Can I come see you? And I said, well, Bruce, you know, you seem like a nice guy, but I don't really know you. And I'm studying, and, you know, I really tried to have a boundary. I didn't know anything about boundaries back then, but I was trying. And so he just was so persistent. And finally I said, Bruce, I tell you what, I got a .38 pistol and I'm not afraid to use it. So if you don't mind coming over, then come on over, big boy. You know, well, I didn't know that was an invitation to an alcoholic, you know, so of course he came over. And I can just tell you that basically we took each other hostage. You know, we were broken people and hurting, and, you know, so that's just what we did. So not long after that, we ended up buying a house together, and eventually got married. And, you know, what I didn't know that he told me that first night is he had quit drinking for a while, maybe year, you know, it had been like 3 years or something. But he did this little gambling thing, and then he smoked these little funny cigarettes. And, you know, I didn't know any of that at the time. So that wasn't to come out until much later. But we got married in 1989. And somewhere after that, we went to a party one night, and he drank again. And I got to see what the disease did to him. He just kept going back and back and back. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, can't you stop? And he couldn't. But I didn't know anything about this disease. And I was so mad. And really from there, our relationship started deteriorating. And I was like, you know, man, God, what have I done? You know, so it was a Friday night, and it was right before Christmas. And he had come home from work, and we ate. Then he was getting ready to leave again. And I said, where are you going? And he said, I'm going to this gambling place. And I said, okay. And, you know, at this point where our relationship was, is I was glad he was gone. If he was out of my hair, I just didn't have to deal with him. I wasn't brave enough to try to end this relationship at this point because, you know, I'm married for the third time, for heaven's sakes. And can't this girl figure anything out? And, you know, and this whole time I'm going to church every week. You know, I am. I mean, that is a part of my life, and I believe in God and I pray. And but I obviously need more. So what ended up happening is that this was the night that I hit my bottom. It was Christmas of 1992, and he didn't come home that night. Now, that wasn't really the part that bothered me, because I slept well. I was like, oh, well, if he's not here, I don't have to deal with him. But the next morning when I woke up, I was like, huh, well, I wonder where he is. And he was supposed to go pick up his mom from the hospital that day. And so I called my sister and I said, Judy, I swear if they find him dead, I did not kill him, because I still had that 38. And I'm sitting at my kitchen table and I'm looking out my front door and I'm thinking, okay, God, I know something's going to be revealed here. And so, you know, I guess he could be hurt, you know, he could be in the hospital, and you know, he could have passed out in his car somewhere. And you know, and then what I locked on was, oh, he might be dead already. And you guys, this is so hard for me to share today, but, and you'll know even more why when I get to the rest of my story, but I started fantasizing him being dead. And I just thought, you know, if he was dead, that would be the answer to all my trouble. And I wouldn't have to be divorced for the third time. And that would really be the answer to all my problems. And I even went as far as to think, gosh, at the funeral home, how could I even act sad? I mean, that's just how sick we get dealing with this stuff. Well, about that time, as you know, he came walking in the door. So, but something had happened to me that day. Something broke down in me, and I knew that something was going to change. I didn't know what. I was trusting God. And so God just weeks later sent me an angel. Now this angel, he was disguised as an employee assistance person, as a speaker at a Rotary meeting I was attending. And I went up to him afterwards and told him I thought my husband had a problem, and he gave me his card and told me to call him. And so I went to visit him, and like a counselor. And when I went to see him, he sent me to classes, this thing called concerned persons at the treatment center. I'm like, wait a minute, there's nothing wrong with me. You know, why do I have to go to these stupid meetings? So, but I went for 6 weeks, and then we did an intervention on my husband and his parents and my parents and my sister and the guy that was with him the night I met him at that bar, and our next door neighbor were all part of it. And I had to write him a letter that night and make him believe that if he didn't go for help, that I was going to get divorced. And he left with the counselor and went for treatment. This is real interesting. Is like, so as soon as he's out the door, I hate his guts. I think, you know, I can't even be sad if he's dead. And weeks later, I'm afraid that he's going to be mad at me because we did the intervention. I mean, you know, that's just how screwed up I was. And, you know, that's just what this disease does to us. But anyway, so we started. I actually got to go to treatment with him 4 nights a week, 3 hours a night for 6 weeks. And then on the weekends, we had to go to a meeting Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So when I'm kind of a, I guess you'd say a black belt Al-Anon, because, you know, when people come in, they're like, oh, I can just go to one meeting a week or whatever. And I say, well, here's what I did when I came in here, you know. So I don't have a lot of patience for that. You know, the sicker we are, the more we need to be here. So so anyways, that was like in 1993 in February. And I'm just so grateful that, you know, he went to get help and that we started this journey together. So all this time, you know, now I'm in my late 30s, and so is Bruce. He's same age as me. And we're moving along in our relationship. And I keep thinking, you know, we might have children someday, but we still haven't. And then I get involved with Al-Anon and go to a home group, and they started this Alateen meeting. And like right after, like the year after I started there. So I started volunteering there. I always loved teenagers. I know I'm weird, but I always have. I've just gravitated to them, maybe to help something, you know, that was still broken inside of me. I don't know. But so I'm working with the Alateens and I'm like, God, you are so cool, you know, that you've given me this gift. And I get to work with these teens and they just, you know, blessed my heart. So then I get the word from the doc that it's time to have a hysterectomy. So I get to grieve. Okay, I'm never going to have kids of my own. You know, that's a reality now. And so I really, you know, did a lot of praying and grieving during that time. But again, I just thought, look, God had already given me Alateens. They were in my life. And, you know, and it's not a sick kind of thing. Like they were, you know, I was taken over as their mom or anything, but they just really blessed something in my heart. And so, you know, they helped me through my grief of not ever having children. And you know, one of the things that my husband's kind of, I would say, more standoffish and that sort of thing. And you know, God just continues to work on both of us as we grow in this program. And you know, I remember the day after I woke up after that surgery that I woke up and he was sitting in a chair. He had gotten up real early in the morning and come back and he was sitting there waiting for me. And I looked around the room and there was all these people that were sponsees of both of ours that were standing in my room and the room was full of flowers. And I can remember almost being embarrassed because just people loved us that much, you know, and, that's just another huge gift of this program is the people that we meet along the way. So we're probably about 7 years or so into recovery at this point. And through the years, I've said, Bruce, what do you think about adoption? And he'd say, oh, it's either my blood or no blood. Well, that sounds kind of final, you know, so it doesn't look like a lot of wiggle room there. So one day, God just put it on my heart really strong, said, Sherry, just ask him one more time about adoption. I'm like, oh, I don't want to. I'm just going to humiliate myself one more time. He's going to say the same thing. And so I just got the courage up with God's help and said, Bruce, you know, what do you think about adopting? And he said, I've been thinking about it too. Well, I about fell off the couch because I was like, I knew God had to have changed his heart. That was the only answer because he was always so adamant about it. So, you know, we found out that both of us we were just like getting these God messages everywhere. We'd see a billboard, we'd see something on TV, friends of ours just adopted. And so we started on this journey and actually worked through a group at our church. And 9 months later, 2 months after September 11th hit America, we were on a plane going to Ukraine to adopt an older child. We told them, because at this point, we're both 44 years old. And I said, I really don't want a baby. Watch, God will give me the baby, you know, but I really didn't want a baby. So we got to Ukraine and flew the next day down to Crimea. And that's where we were going to meet, you know, some children from that orphanage. And they ended up bringing two children out. One was Anna. And after she left, the director of the orphanage said, oh, it's really sad. Both of her parents became alcoholic. And my heart just jumped. I was like, woohoo, if I needed a sign from God, it was like, she was the right one. You know, we know all about that. But we said, you guys have taught us, you know, go home, think about it, pray about it, and come back the next day. So that's what we did. So the next day I asked Anna in Russian, I just learned, we stayed with this little Russian lady. And so she helped me phonetically say, will you be our daughter? Because she was 7 years old. And she only spoke Russian, and I wanted her to have some ownership in the decision. That's just what God had put on my heart. So we asked her, and she said yes. And so we go outside of the orphanage together, Bruce and Anna and I, after we ask her. And Bruce was taking a picture of Anna and I, and And I had a cross on during the trip, and it must have been hanging out, you know, over my under my coat or something. And so Anna looks at me, and the first words that I understand her to say to me are Mama, which is Mom, Jesus, which is Jesus. And she reached down in her coat and pulled out this tiny little thread that was like, that looked like it was ready to break, with this little cross on it. And, you know, she wasn't able to tell me, you know, the relevant, you know, what that cross stood for her. But to her, it was a connection to her two sisters that she was separated from in a previous orphanage that were older than her. And one of her sisters had gone back to a missionary three times so that each one of those girls could have one of those crosses. And those were the first words that I understood her to say. So, you know, this was a God appointment, we felt like. And so we bring her back to America. It's culture shock. You know, she can't speak the language. It was not an easy road. You know, it sounds like this pretty picture. It was very difficult at times. I never regret it. But the week after we came back to America, I was still an Alateen sponsor. So guess where her little tail was that Monday night? She was in an Alateen meeting. She couldn't even speak English, but she was in an Alateen meeting at 7 years old. And those kids just loved on her and welcomed her. And I think the first month she sat in the meeting with a hoodie over her head because she just was so shy. But so it's you know, so, you know, we just were all part of this program, this beautiful program. I left Alateen, you know, not long after that. I decided, you know, she doesn't need me for her sponsor, you know, in Alateen. So I got somebody to replace me, and I started, that's when I started, like I say, about 7 or 8 years doing other things. I'd never been a GR, and all this time I've been involved at the area level doing different things, and, you know, a lot of times representing Alateen, but I just hadn't ever done things. And people would say, are you going to let your name stand for delegate? I'm like, I've never been a GR, you know, but I'd been around so much, I guess they thought I had done these other things. So with that, I started, you know, my journey being GR and things like that. So this was probably like, it was a few years into recovery. We were going to the 2008 International in Pittsburgh, and we had signed up, and I'd never been to an Al-Anon International. And so we said, you know, will you do service? Oh, sure, whatever you need. And, you know, and I signed us all up. I don't even know if I ask anybody, you know, I still have that character defect sometimes of control. But, you know, I signed us all up, and then about 2 weeks before the convention, I got a contact from Pat Quiggle at the time up at WSO, and he said, Sherry, he said, oh, he said, we would like you all to be speakers at the Al-Anon International. And I said, oh, okay, you know, and I'd done a little speaking around Louisville, so, you know, it's like, you know, no big deal, probably just one of these little breakout sessions, because I'd been to AA International, and I sort of knew how they did stuff, I thought. And I said, well, you're just talking like one of those little breakout sessions or something, right? And he said, well, Sherry, what answer would you like me to give you? And I said, well, just the truth. And he said, no, you're going to be our stadium speakers on Friday night. And so if you want to see what kind of recovery you have, stick a family that's going to speak in front of thousands of people that are scared to death and driving to Pittsburgh together. So, and trying to control your daughter that I think, I don't know, she might've been 13 at the time or something. Anyways, it was a trip. So, you know, we just had that great honor to do that. And I'll forever be grateful. I wouldn't want to do it again, but it was a blessing. So the next thing, and talk about needing, you know, some spirituality. Yeah, we had a lot of people praying for us, and there's people praying for me right now while I'm speaking. I ask for that. So then, you know, Anna's growing up. She's, you know, building her life. Graduates from high school. She was involved in golf, and it was in ROTC in a program where they did a lot of stuff, flipping their rifles and all that, a lot of competition. So she, you know, she's, you know, moving on and trying to figure out what she's going to do with her life. And you know, got a boyfriend, you know, starts dating this guy that was also from Ukraine, actually from the same orphanage, and they had grown up in church together. And so in 2014, Bruce was getting sick. He was just getting really sick, and he just was in so much pain. And we had this surgery planned, and it was supposed to have this horrible storm in Louisville that night. So we had spent the night downtown, and spent the night. So we wouldn't, you know, miss it. So they just said it'd just be a couple hours, and he had Crohn's disease. And so we thought it would just be like a little resection or something. And so all my peeps were supposed to be there with me, you know, how we show up at these things, and nobody could get there because of the ice storm. So God said, I gotcha. You know, I know you like people, you know, God with skin on, we all do, but sometimes it just can't be. So you're just going to have to deal with me. So, you know, I mean, I was able to text people and stuff, you know, while I was waiting. And there was a lady from my church that I had found out that worked downstairs. So I was able to reach out to her. But this surgery was going on at this point about 4 hours. And I finally went up and said, hey, you know, can you give me an update? And they said, well, she's just about done. And she'll be out to talk to you soon. So I waited, and she finally came and took me into this room, and she showed me this picture, and she said, Sherry, I don't know what he's got. She showed me this picture, this horrible purple thing that she took out of his gut. And she said it was as big as a honeydew melon around. And she said, I did a cancer surgery on the spot, and you know, I really don't know what it is. And this woman was, she's a teacher at the University of Louisville and world renowned trainer and everything, and wonderful surgeon. Thank God that we had her. That was a gift, because we had never heard of her before this came up. And but she really didn't know what it was. She said, I think it might be a lymphoma, but I really don't know. So I'm not sure that, you know, it gets a little fuzzy, but I mean, I'm sure I was in shock. My sponsor and another friend came down and, you know, took me out to eat like the next day. But, you know, I was just trying to absorb what all was going on. And maybe the next day, this guy came in that was the lymphoma expert, and I think they said whenever it was a stage 4 lymphoma. It was in his liver, just, you know. And so in my mind, he was dead. I mean, I just saw no way that, you know, he could make it. I mean, you know, it just was horrible. And I was wrong, because he's still here. And, you know, medicine is unbelievable. And if God's not done with you yet, then, you know, there's going to be something that's going to keep you going. So, you know, we went through treatments for 9 months. I say we, because I just went with him. But, you know, one of the things that I learned during that time was really how to take care of myself, because I would pack a bag, and I would have care for me, to take care of me, you know, water, crocheting, you know, things to pass the time, make sure I had a phone charger and all these things, because, you know, when we go through this stuff, it takes a lot of energy and it's exhausting. And yet, you know, we still have to be up for the task. So So, you know, fast forward, you know, this is 2020. So that's, you know, been about 6 years ago now. And he's on a golf trip this weekend. We both enjoy golf these days together and separately. So that's one of the gifts that we've gotten out of being in recovery. So this happened yesterday. I was looking, I really wanted to find my book, As We Understood, and I cannot find it anywhere. And for a spiritual talk, you know, I wanted to read to you page 214 in As We Understood, and it's the steps in a spiritual way in about two or three paragraphs. So if you don't know about that reading, check it out. You know, I love our literature. It's just such a beautiful reading. But as I was looking through things, I found this note from my sponsor. She had sent me a card on my 14th Al-Anon birthday, and she had some notes from step work we had done in 1998. So, here's some of the character defects that I was, working on that she was identifying. I accepted unacceptable behavior. I would go to the empty well, people pleasing. I know y'all can't identify with any of these. Discounting my own feelings, enmeshed with people, the thought that love can be earned, and approval seeking. And it was like, wow, that is so like on time just to say, I think I'm a little bit better with some of that today than I used to be. So, I know Terry said that, you know, I mentioned about the 12th step, and when I first came into Al-Anon, I just locked onto that. And I know a lot of it's because, you know, we're such control freaks and we want to carry the message sometimes inappropriately, bossy and, pushing people into Al-Anon, and I probably did some of that. But today my mission is, you know, just to try to be an example, be there when people reach out. It is amazing to me the people that have found us during this pandemic. Somebody sent me an email like last week and said, do you have a list of sponsors? And I'm like, well, no, we don't really have a list of sponsors. We got meeting lists. But so I just said, well, call me and, you know, we'll talk. And so, you know, we've hooked up, and I have no idea how she even knew who I was or how to get hold of me. So, you know, but God does. And, you know, thank goodness for websites. And we've got an AIS office here in Louisville. You know, some of my favorite sayings these days in service are presume goodwill. How important is it? Press the process. I was sitting next to the our current alternate delegate that was running for delegate, and she was just a wreck during our last week. And I just wrote her a note and said, just trust the process, you know. And it's just so hard waiting when you want something, you know, so bad. Because of this program and my higher power, who I choose to call God, I have a better relationship, not only with friends, with people in recovery, people I do service work with, but also my husband and my daughter. And, you know, I'm able to be quiet more. I can be more accepting. And a lot of times, especially during doing service, like you guys are doing this weekend, I have to pray, God, help me keep my mouth shut, because sometimes I just don't need to say anything else. So I'm just going to read one more little thing, and then I'll let you guys get back to business. It's called Put the Matter in God's Hands. Your present situation may not be to your liking. Perhaps you are dissatisfied and discouraged. Put the matter in God's hands. If he wants you elsewhere, he will lead you there, providing you are amenable to his will. But perhaps he wants you where you are. In that case, he will help you to adjust to the situation. He will make you content, even grateful for present opportunities. Learn the great art of doing the best you can with what you have, where you are. When you do this, you learn how to reach the better condition or how to make your present situation a better one. Thanks for listening, you guys.
Thank you, Sherry. Thank you so much. That was really enjoyable. And I didn't know half of this stuff. I didn't know hardly any of this stuff about you. But it was a higher power moment when I was asked, well, how about if you find one of your delegates to come be our speaker? And I was like, okay, yeah, I could do that. And I was like, who should I ask? And immediately popped in my mind, Sherry. And I'm so glad I listened. So thank you, Sherry. It was a pleasure.
All right. Thank you again, Sherry. And thank you for blessing the Virginia Area Assembly with your wonderful message of hope and recovery. Thank you so much for taking time.